This is Totally Cool Tech, the show that brings you the hottest in cool technology. No matter if it's old school or new school, high tech or low tech, it's all still cool tech. Welcome, everybody. This is Totally Cool Tech Podcast, edition number 523, Megatech, for Thursday, May 26, 2011. I'm Norbert Davis, your host. Today's Totally Cool Tech is proudly sponsored by GoToMeeting. And Totally Cool Tech is a proud member of the techpodcasts.com network. If it's tech, it's here. And we're also part of the blueberry.com podcast community. That's blueberry, spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. Go check out both of these sites for other great podcasts. Now, I'm hoping that you guys are getting this good because I am getting some weird sounds in my headset here. And man, I get a lot of like static feedback, all sorts of stuff. I hope it's not my microphone, because if my microphone's going, that's really going to hurt me here. I'm going to have to change up a lot of things, and I don't want to have to do that. So hopefully we can fix that along the way. Hopefully it's just something that's going on inside my headset. I don't know. Looking at the waveform here on the podcast recording equipment here and on Audacity, and I'm seeing some weird stuff there too. So I don't know. Maybe it's the start of a new thing here where I have to get some new equipment. Oh, well, you know, I can't afford it right now, but oh well. All right. Let's see. I want to go ahead and talk about today's sponsor, and which is GoToMeeting. And meetings are an essential part of any business. And, you know, if you're presenting to clients, collaborating with colleagues, making them the meetings as simple as possible to run and organize, GoToMeeting is perfect. And it's by Citrix, one of the best names in the industry today. And it's the easiest, most reliable online meeting surface available. With GoToMeeting, you can schedule an online meeting in seconds. Attendees can join with just a click from a mouse from anywhere. And the meeting materials are viewed on everyone's screen, making collaboration seamless. GoToMeeting is so easy to use for you and everyone joining your meeting. Plus, with GoToMeeting, you can hold as many meetings as you want for one flat rate. That's it. Phone conferencing and voice over IP are included. I've used this a lot in my industry that I'm in, and general contracting, collaborating with all the different subcontractors and engineers and stuff like that. We get together, we view our building in 3D, look at for the problems, and we solve problems that way. It's really, really great. Now, you, my audience, can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. That's a month free of unlimited online meetings. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code PODCAST. All right. On this episode, today's Totally Cool Tech, got some really good stuff for you. I was at John Wayne Airport in Orange County Monday, waiting to come home, waiting for my flight. So kind of got all this together. So it may be a little bit old news, but still pretty cool stuff here. And checking out from the BBC, a laser put a record data rate through fiber. And researchers have set a new record for the rate of data transfer using a single laser at 26 terabits per second. Are you kidding me? 26 terabits per second? That's like a 1 terabyte hard drive stacked 26 deep, and all that data transferred in 1 second. That's huge. That is awesome. Now, it says at those speeds, contents of nearly 1,000 high definition DVDs could have been sent down the optical fiber in a second. So that would be the equivalent of a terabyte drive, or 26 terabyte drives. And the trick is to use what is known as fast Fourier transform to unpick more than 300 separate colors of light in a laser beam, each encoded with its own string of information. I don't even know how that's done. And I guess the technique is described in the journal Nature Photonics, which is something that I don't subscribe to. Maybe I should, I don't know. And I guess the push for higher data rates in light-based telecommunication technologies has seen a number of significant leaps in recent years, And while the earliest optical fiber technologies encoded a string of data as wiggles within a single color of light sent down a fiber, newer approaches have used number of tricks to increase the data rates. And among them is what is known as orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. That's a lot different than wiggles, because the only wiggles that I knew of were on the kids' shows. You know, they're out of either New Zealand or Australia. You know, they all wore different color shirts and anything like that. It's kind of like the Teletubbies, but with humans. Wow, you know what? This is going to be this is just going to be awesome to see that we're going to have data rates on, you know, fiber, because I've got fiber to the home for my internet. And if they could get me, 1/26th of that, you know, a terabit per second, I'd be happy with that. I mean, you could be watching anything you want on demand live, and the throughput would just be awesome. So hopefully something like this, you know, will start making its way to the consumer. You know, we'd be watching, you know, Netflix would be so awesome. It would be much more awesome than it is now. So think about it. That fast a data rate, the movies and all the different things you can have going on at the same time. Different, you know, family members can be watching different things in the house, doing different things simultaneously with that kind of throughput. That is awesome. Okay, next up we have the XI3 Chromium computer and the Chromium PC modular computer. Now, I like a nice compact machine, you know, for a computer, and unfortunately the machines I have here are not that, because this would be cool. And it's the XI3 Chromium PC, which is touted to be the first desktop computer in the world that is powered by Google's Chrome operating system. The PC chassis itself looks very different from what, you know, you're used to seeing. It's basically a cube, kind of like an X-ish type of extrusion thing. But it's pretty cool. It's the patented XI3 computer architecture. And it boasts a tiny form factor, and it's comprised of low power, only about 20 watt dual core modular computer, which is highly adaptable to any environment, to have it run other operating systems if you so desire. You know, you can run in Linux, Windows, the Chromium, you know, the Chrome operating system from Google. This is awesome. And there's a whole bunch of different things that this thing can do. You can mount this to the back of a monitor. It'll actually hook up. There's a mounting kit that'll hook to the VESA, the VESA mounting bracket holes on the back. So you can have the PC just hooked right to the back of your monitor, and everything comes out of that. It is awesome. Now, the way it will veer away from traditional computers is, and because of its architecture, makes it a possibility that the XI3 modular computer can change its personality, where it takes a replacement I/O module. Currently, the Chromium PC will run on a dual or single core 64-bit x86 based processor, and where it's housed in a chassis that measures 4 inches by almost 3 5/8 by another 3 5/8 inches. And you can have different multiple colors that you can choose from, but I like the Chrome version, especially if you're going to be running Chrome. But the nice thing is you can switch out these different parts of the computer, so it's never really out of date. You can update just what you need to update, and it keeps a nice, healthy, running, up-to-date system. This is really cool. Plus, it's very, very small. The form factor is very small, and I think that's the way computers really ought to be. You know, especially like a desktop ought to be that way. And I like the fact that it mounts, you can mount it to the back of your monitor. That's the way to go. Now, it's not exactly cheap. It's going to be going for about $900 really for their standard version. I didn't really see any way to make it less expensive, but I'm trying to get a hold of the Chromium PC people and see if we can't get one in here for a review. I'd love to take a look at this and run that one through its paces, especially with the Chrome operating system on it. That would be awesome. All right. Now, you know, I'm still down, going down to, the OC, you know, the Orange County, in LA for my parent company. And a couple of the guys there actually go and, go surfing. And they, you know, if they're not in early in the morning, you can just figure they're, you know, at a board meeting is what they call it. So, you know, they're out, catching some surf there and, riding the waves. And this company, decided to go ahead and make what they call a wave jet. And it's a stick-on engine for surfboards. This is pretty slick. Now, if you've always wanted to go surfing, but were too lazy to paddle out there, you know, yourself to the waves or whatever, or you thought, you know, I'll never be able to get up enough speed because I'm, you know, too afraid of the big surf, the wave jet is what you're looking for. The wave jet is a personal water propulsion system engine here. That you can stick on the bottom of a surfboard, boogie board, kayak, even a small watercraft to give it an extra boost. It's got a rechargeable set of batteries on board for about 30 minutes of propulsion, and it can get you on, get you going. Speeds up about 3 times faster than paddling, so probably about 7-8 miles an hour, I presume there, something like that. Now, just don't expect too much of respect from the other surfers, of course, you know, because they'll probably want to, you know, pound you. Maybe, you know, if you're if you've got a river or something like that, you know, you want to go ahead and test this out on a nice slow moving river, maybe even a lake, you know, a lake or something like that, where, you know, it's not, the water's not too choppy. You want it pretty even if you're going to be testing this out. But that would be actually pretty be pretty cool. Learn how to start surfing and things like that. Or you can surf, like I said, practice surfing in areas that you would normally not be able to do that in, like a river or a lake or something like that. But pretty cool. I think the boogie board would probably be more my style. I'm just not coordinated enough to paddle and get up on top of a surfboard and ride that thing. So, but pretty cool. Of course, you know, like I said, I don't know if the guys at work would approve of this, but I think it's pretty cool. I might have to pass it by them and see what they think about it, get their opinion. I thought it was cool. All right, check this out. I own a Vizio TV. I bought that 32-inch 720p LCD, I don't know, about 5 years ago, I'd say. Well, you know, back then Vizio was, you know, one of these brand new companies, but they've really been coming into their own. They've been doing a lot of great things with the way they've been building their TVs and so forth. And now it looks like Vizio is stepping it up with their remotes, and they've added a Vudu and Netflix button to several of their products that they're coming out with, some of their remotes on those. And this is pretty cool because, I mean, you never see anybody, you know, without, you know, you never see any remotes with Netflix on them, which would be, you know, your most common one, I think, if you had them with things like the Roku. You have the different channels and so forth like that. But I guess several Vizio products, including not only Blu-ray players, but also the televisions are coming out with this, that have coming out with the HD and the 3D variety of sets, and they're going to offer the one button access, which actually represents an improvement over earlier versions. In previous versions, accessing devices like Vudu and Netflix took a little crawling around in the menus, and now you just simply go ahead and activate your streaming accounts, you know, just by one touch of a button. How cool is that? So I guess there are some a few reports, I guess, are going around that it's putting some pressure, industry pressure, on systems like Apple TV, which, you know, are simply set-top boxes geared towards providing streaming access to televisions that don't already offer that. But, you know, considering the growing number of televisions that are out there, including, you know, Ethernet ports or outright Wi-Fi connections that are on some of these, it's plain to see that television makers indeed, you know, including, you know, like home theater component makers in general, are counting on streaming becoming the dominant channel for home theater content or provisions, you know, therefore. And how is this going to affect the market? How is this going to affect our products, you know, our monitors, our TVs, our Blu-ray players, you know, any of that? You know, are we going to have too many boxes that have all this capability? Do you want just one? How do you want it? I mean, I kind of like having, if you remember the old stereo systems, used to be component stereo systems where you bought, you know, your CD changer or, you know, your phonograph and your amp and your receiver and the dual tape deck, things like that. And you would, you know, kind of build your system the way you really liked it. I kind of like that concept where I buy the parts and pieces that I want, not this all in one, because I don't want my TV having all that capability, you know, on its own. And, then my receiver having that capability and my Blu-ray player having that capability. There's just too much access, you know. Which one do you really want? I want one thing. I want to be able to have like maybe a universal remote, like a, you know, Harmony, that I can tell what I want to access, what I want it to access or playback or whatever. So I don't know, you know, are we integrating too much into everything, or do we want it parts and pieces? Do you want a Roku box? Do you want a Boxy box? You know, Apple TV, Google TV box, or do you want it embedded into your TV, your Blu-ray player? How do you want it? I don't know. All right. You know, if something breaks down, I want to be able to replace just that piece. So I guess that's just me. All right. Government is starting to mandate that black boxes be installed in cars. And why not? You know, I think it there's some good sides to this where we can get better information on how vehicles react in real crashes. You know, there's nothing like field data. Getting the real data, not these, you know, staged car crashes like you see on TV, you know, with the crash test dummies and all that. Those are not real life. They don't have those intricacies of unique events. You know, they're very controlled, they're very precise. You know, they crash the cars in specific ways. And that's not always how it happens out there in the real world. This would be some, you know, data we can get back, which would be good. But it looks like at the federal level, there's a requirement for the electronic black boxes in your car, and it sounds a bit Big Brotherish, and it is. But in fact, many cars already include such devices, and there is confusion resulting from the different data recording methods. Law enforcement, requires, they want some stuff, you know. Some see this as a slippery slope ending in a dash camera and GPS logging. But others see the potential for vastly increased safety and standardized legal limits for that kind of data. You know, that's really going to be a tough one to legislate and regulate. And, you know, there's a ton of different things you can do with these things. You know, they can be logging you GPS-wise. They can be checking your hard stops and starts and all that kind of stuff. And as a matter of fact, companies like Progressive Insurance, I don't know if you've seen the new ad, they have this device called a snapshot where you go ahead and there's a little OBD2. It's the port where they go ahead and clip on to your computer, and they can actually check all the data out. Number one, you know, the mechanic uses it to determine, you know, whether your engine's running right or not, checks the error codes and all that kind of stuff, resets your car if it needed to be done. And, what they do is you go ahead and you put this onto your device, the device onto your car, and you drive around for 30 days. And after 30 days, I guess you go ahead and you upload that data to Progressive, and they will determine, you know, how safe you've been driving and tailor your insurance to how you drive. Well, that's pretty good, but exactly what are they, you know, what are they recording? Supposedly, you know, they're recording, you know, how safe you drive as far as, you know, what time of day you're driving. Not so much your speeds to see if you're speeding or not or whatever, but just some of your habits. You know, you're starting, you're stopping, the time of day, the area that you're doing it, a few things like that. But is that really what they're doing? You know, how do we know? It's not open source. It's not open. They don't give you that data. That data is kind of private to them. So nobody really knows. And I don't like that. You know, I really don't want that to be able to be used against me if I did something stupid. I mean, that's just me. That's a kind of a privacy thing. I don't know. What do you think? How would you react to having a black box in your vehicle? I mean, there's a, like I said, there's the good side and there's the bad side of this. I don't know. It's kind of a, you know, it's a double-edged sword, but it could be a good thing. Hey, how would you like to be able to, over the internet, turn your lights on and off at home from anywhere in the world over the net? That would just be so cool, wouldn't it? There's a company or a product called iRemote, and it allows you to, or iRemo, and it allows you to go ahead and turn off like certain things like lights and things like that. It's basically a power strip in the cloud, and the seemingly vanilla power strip is anything but that. And it boasts one of the oddest additions of tiny OS embedded in a wireless LAN chip. And it's all the better to turn your lights on and off. That's what it's being used for. Users can control the internet-enabled socket remotely via a mobile or desktop web browser, allowing them to switch off gadgets and lights after leaving the house. Now, say you left home and you left the lights on, and you know what? You don't have an opportunity to go ahead, log on, and turn this thing off. You could actually have a predetermined length of time that the power strip, you know, stays powered, or that port does, and you can actually have it turn off after a predetermined time. Actually, pretty cool. And if you're forgetful enough to need a light switch in the cloud, this is gonna it's gonna give you peace of mind for about $122. Now, these things aren't out of R&D yet, but it would be really cool to be able to get one of these, don't you think? I would love to have one of these and be able to turn off my kid's Xbox from work, you know, or from anywhere. I'd be able to love to just go in there, tap in, and go, "You're done, boys. Go back to doing some chores or things like that. It's summer vacation. Go outside. Have some fun." So, pretty cool. $122. I would actually buy that. I think that's actually pretty cool. Okay, well, hey, Japan, just talking about power, Japan is considering a plan to require solar panels to be installed on all new buildings. And I guess according to the Nikkei Business Daily, Japan is considering a plan that would require solar panels on all new buildings and homes by 2030. The Prime Minister will likely reveal the details on the plan today, I guess Thursday, when he speaks at the G8 summit in France to prove their commitment to renewable energy and development. I think this is kind of a byproduct of the problems that they've been having at their nuclear power plants, and they're trying to break away now from that nuclear power strategy and switch to renewable energy. And this is actually a kind of a good way to do it. You know, mandating that kind of stuff, being a leader in this would actually help them out and get away from that dependence on foreign oil and nuclear energy for their power generation. At least we would lessen that need. And they can, you know, maybe put a nuclear power plant someplace not around a lot of homes and businesses and, you know, industrial centers or towns and cities and things like that. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes, and maybe pay attention to the news tonight and listen to see what happens at the G8 summit in France. All right. Hey, Motorola has a super secret project involving the Droid X. I guess according to reports online, members of the Motorola Feedback Network, have started receiving emails informing them that they are of an enrollment survey for a confidential Droid X project is now up. Hopefully the members can head on over to that page and complete the survey. And if they are interested in joining the test program, They can get into that thing. Unfortunately, I'm not in it. Some folks have been speculating that it is an upcoming gingerbread ROM for the Droid X, but Motorola has been known to have similar tests in the past with MFN, which is the Motorola Feedback Network. But there hasn't been much discretion or indiscretions going on as far as letting things out. This has led people to think that if it does go beyond a simple OS update, or that it might go beyond a simple OS update, and perhaps it might involve testing of a new phone. So maybe they're going to put, Apple's been doing, put a new phone in an old case. Basically, you know, a new phone in a Droid X package, you know, wolf in sheep's clothing, so to speak. So something might be going on over there at Motorola. So next time you see some guy on a Droid X, be very careful to check out and see if you see something different on their Droid X than is on, say, your Droid X. Okay, what else we got? Oh, yeah, I love this one. Cool cupcakes for geeks. I found this over at Tech eBlog. Thought this was awesome. They have a bunch of pictures of different cupcakes wrapped, basically, or decorated in tons of different types of geek motifs. They've got, Pac-Man. They got a whole series of cupcakes set up like the Pac-Man screen. That's pretty cool. They had some great Mario Brothers ones. They had, what else? Not Centipede, but they had Missile Defense. They had that. They had, this looks like Galaga. I think that's what it was. Oh, what was the other ones that I liked? I didn't like that one. Sorry, I was just kind of going through these a little bit. Yeah, there's Mario Brothers, actually pretty good. A lot of good work of fondant, some Star Wars, a good C-3PO there. Well, not really that good looking one. This is a good looking one of Cookie Monster. So they got a Cookie Monster cupcake eating a cookie. They have a real cookie in his mouth. That was actually kind of pretty cool. There's Pac-Man again. That wasn't not really great of a Pac-Man. Saw some other ones. And I actually have a bonus link on here for some really good stuff. Oh, yeah, there's one. There's Missile Defense, Dig Dug, and all that kind of stuff. A lot of use of fondant. I tell you what, that's a very useful decorating media, I guess you'd call it, for making these cupcakes and geek-oriented. Really, really cool. If you love cupcakes and you're very geeky, you may want to check this out. Like I said, I got a bonus link for you to some really good cupcakes as well. You know, Star Wars and the Wii, the avatars and all that kind of stuff. Some that are Twitter-based, Guitar Hero-based, Simpsons-based, all sorts of stuff. You want to check that out. Some really good work, artwork done on cupcakes. How cool is that? All right, Dr. Watson, I believe, IBM, their computer Watson, is now studying to diagnose illnesses. Watson became a Jeopardy champ by devouring all sorts of different reference texts, such as encyclopedias, history books, as well as primary cultural sources, such as novels and film scripts. But now it's loading up on medical journals and textbooks as well as medical sites and forums online, trying to become as adept at figuring out what's wrong with somebody, medically speaking, as it was at picking up on wordplay and wordplay filled trivia questions. So it's going to be interesting to see how long it's going to take Dr. Watson to be able to see if, you know, you've got laryngitis, if you've got cancer or whatever. That is just going to be really, really interesting to see how that works and see how smart Dr. Watson can really, really get. So, man, I didn't think they would actually do that. I didn't see this one coming, but it's actually probably a really good use for a computer like that. Can't wait to see how that goes. All right. Now, Toyota is going to launch a new social network for people who like to befriend car dealerships or something like that, I guess. According to Engadget, a social network, you know, we end up like Facebook or Twitter or MySpace or whatever, is kind of like the big thing of late. It's the new way for everybody to communicate, and Toyota wants to get in on that. And they just announced plans to launch one for its customers. And, you know, you got to sit there and go, why? But, you know, it can just be based on Twitter or Facebook or whatever to let you know something's, you know, available. You know, you can follow a company on like LinkedIn or Twitter or Facebook, whatever. It doesn't matter. Do you really think we need something like that? I don't know. I don't think we do. But I guess, you know, the service will dish up battery power warnings to electric vehicle owners, along with maintenance tips and, you know, advice. You know, they can, you know, just give you little hints, tips, and tricks and things like that. I don't know if I'd go for that. I mean, you know, it's, I don't know, just another thing I would have, you know, clogging my email or my inbox for Twitter or Facebook. You know, just, I don't need all that junk. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm trying to cut out as much of that stuff as I can. You know, I got too much chaff and not enough wheat, right now, at least it seems to me. So I don't think I need a thing like my car company, tweeting me every other day about, you know, hey, you know, time to go change your oil. Now, if the car wants to do that and tell me that it's in need of that, that's, I guess, one thing. Of course, you know, you can just do like I used to do on my old Volkswagen. You know, when you turn a corner and the oil light comes on, that's, you know, that's your cue to go ahead and add some more oil to the car. So, I don't know. The new cars don't kind of like that kind of stuff. But, I don't know. I don't like this too much. Just get it out of my inbox. Get it out away from there. I don't need Toyota, Ford, GM, whomever, Honda, you know, clogging my internet tubes any more than I need half the other junk that I got coming, clogging my internet tubes and my inbox and all that. So, I don't know. Just one more thing to kind of mess you up. All right. Yeah. Who cares? Who cares about Toyota and all those guys? We don't need them. They're putting black boxes in your car. Yeah. Forget them. Oh, don't want to hear from them anyway. All right. Hey, you know what? I'm planning on putting a game room together for my kids. And one of the things I thought about having to do was I got to mount a TV on the wall so they can play their games. And I'm not sure if I want to get one of the adjustable mounted TV things that, you know, articulates and pivots and tilts and all that kind of stuff. Or do I want to go old school? Do I want to just go ahead and do something like a French cleat is what it's called. It's where you have two angled pieces of wood and, you screw one to the wall, one's onto the object that you want to hang, which would obviously be the television. And they're angled in a fashion where, you know, one clips onto the, or one rests on the other and it won't fall. It's a pretty cool little idea. If you want to see, I've got a link up here, to Lifehacker, and they kind of show how the French cleat works. It could be really, really simple, really easy. I mean, you know, the mounts that, you know, for your TVs cost, I don't know what, $50, $60, $80, $100, depending on the size of the TV. And, you know, you got to hit that, location on the wall just right. If you don't get it on a stud and you got a TV, I'd say over 26 inches, you don't get that done right. You know, if you just try and hang it onto the wall with, those little molly bolts or anything like that, you could be looking at that thing coming right off and ripping the sheetrock off. It could be really bad, cause that's going to destroy your TV. So you got to at least put it on a stud or put something that goes across from stud to stud and then mount to that. If you're going to be doing it, and with a French cleat, you can do that very easily. Because if you don't get that right on the stud, you're going to be putting a lot of weight on that sheetrock, and it's not going to hold it well. So, you know, there's a couple things you can do. They have this one wall anchor that goes into sheetrock that, yeah, it's pretty good, but it's not that great because you're putting all the weight on the sheetrock. And to hang on to the sheetrock, you got to pretty much destroy part of it right where you're working on this drywall screw. It's kind of a good idea, but only for light stuff, not for heavy stuff. So I'm debating how I'm going to mount those, mount that TV for the kids. Not that they're getting it anytime soon, but when I do go to do it, I might go with something simple and easy. And the French cleat might be the nice old school way to do it. So if you have an idea, if you have a good idea of how maybe you've mounted kind of a large screen TV, something like in the 32-inch range, cheap, easy. Maybe you have something that's really high tech that really didn't cost a lot, or you have a really, neat idea of how to do it. Send that along. I would like to know how you've done that. Have you done anything really cool doing that? Or did you, I don't know, maybe I can go on a Craigslist or something like that and try and find a mount that someone doesn't want anymore and do that. But yeah, I'd like to hear back from you. See what you guys have got. What are your ideas for something like this? So go ahead and send those on in, if you could please, to tctpodcast@gmail.com. And, just go ahead and send in any questions, comments, or whatever, hate mail. Just go ahead and send that in to me at tctpodcast@gmail.com. And hey, if you like the show, and hopefully you do, please recommend us to a friend, working on this and having some fun, trying to, while I'm being shipped out, to keep this thing going as best I can. It hasn't really been easy, being down in Orange County and traveling and all that, just really taking a lot out of me. And not that doing this isn't something that I don't want to do. I love doing it. It just, with all that travel, it can be a little bit hard. All right. Hey, all the show notes and links and contact info are out on the website at www.totallycooltech.com. And let us know about any kind of cool tech that you've been using, or you've been introduced to, you spotted. If you see something and you think it's really nifty, send it on our way. I would love to talk about it and see what you found. All right. You can go ahead and email us, like I said, at tctpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call the Totally Cool Tech Podcast listener line over at 540-999-TECH. You can look for us on Twitter. Just search for TCT Podcast. You can also find us over on Facebook there. And I guess that's going to be it. All right, everybody. That is it. I will see you next time.